Welcome to today's mystery title show, Bannister Success Secret Methods. Yes, a show where we're going to analyze and discover what actually was Bannister's secret. And if you don't know who Bannister is, or are not sure if I mean Roger, yes I do, stay tuned. This show is for you.
Welcome to Hypno Running, the show where we do more than just talk about running. We help you find solutions to develop your full potential, making you a better, faster, and smarter runner. And here is your host, Heiko.
Indeed, great to have you here, especially if you are a regular listener. Thank you very, very much for joining and for your support. Sir Roger Bannister was a British middle distance runner and a neurologist. Ha! Who is best known for being the first person to run a mile in under 4 minutes. And this really great historic achievement took place on the 6th of May 1954 at a track in Oxford, England. And Bannister completed the mile in 3 minutes, 59 seconds, breaking that magical 4-hour minute barrier that had long been considered, like now with our 2-hour marathon, a significant milestone in athletics. Now, Roger Bannister's accomplishment, it was this big turning point in history of middle distance running, and it's really one of the big achievements in sport generally. Most people know about this. And, you know, quite interesting, after retiring from competitive running, Bannister, he continued his medical career, and he was a very distinguished doctor, and he contributes the athletics and medicine, or his contribution to both athletics and medicine, they left a huge legacy. And for example, it wasn't seen like that at that moment in time. Santi, he seemed like he was a stronger candidate on paper. What time are you talking about? The time when the mile was still taking longer than 4 minutes. And this gentleman hit impressive speed, and he had a remarkable 47.4 for 440 yards, 148 for 800 meters. That means he was outshining Bannister's best of 1 minute 50. So Bannister, for 800 meters, took 1 minute 50, and Santi, 148. So, you know, most probably Santi should be the one to break that, that mile record. And Santi also demonstrated endurance because he was a cross-country champion and an Olympian over 5,000 meters. So he was like a well-rounded athlete. But he had some challenges. The college he was at required him to run 2 or 3 races nearly every weekend. Listen up, this is important, especially if you're a lazy bone runner. So, for example, there was a meet where Santi, he ran 48 for 440 yards, 151 for 880 yards, and 405 for a mile, all in the same weekend. And despite being in shape to break the 4-minute barrier, you know, he focused on team relays, and rather than targeting that solo historic moment in running, and by the time Santi, you know, finally, you know, got his running goals straight, Bannister already had achieved that goal. And Santi's dream of breaking the 4 minutes, it was basically, it was over, you know. I mean, it was already done. Then there was John Landy. You might have heard that name as well. He was training and competing in Australia, and he did lots of 700 by 600 yards repeats. Can you imagine it? 700 by 600 yard repeats. And he was working from July to October training, and his daily routine included 10 by 600 yards intervals with 600 yard jog recoveries. I'm getting tired just reading this piece of paper with notes. And Landy's dedication was proving to be successful, because do you know what his time was for the mile? 4:02. And his intention was to basically face a better track, meaning better soil, track conditions, and better competition environment in Europe. And however, by the time he got to Finland, he also realized he was too late. So John Landy was actually the second person to break the 4-minute barrier. It's like, you know, who's the second person on the moon? And Santi is remembered as a fantastic runner who just fell short of that. And then their predecessors, Arne Andersen and Gunder Hag, they traded that world record 6 times, 4:06. And down to 4:01, and then they were banned for violating some other amateur rule. Now, did you know that as Roger Bannister was standing on that line, on that going to the actual day of the race, he was seriously considering to not attempt the run due to wind? And if Santi, the other runner, if his coach had allowed him to only focus on the mile, or if Landy had found different training partners, and perhaps if he would have moved to Europe earlier, history might have been completely different. So it means that this success, it's often a mixture of preparation, circumstances, and of course, let's throw in luck. But history only focuses on that psychological breakthrough, you know, this where he's exhausted, his head is back. Can you see the picture in your mind where Roger Bannister crosses the line and it's like his chest is like crossing through the line, but his head is thrown back, his arms are already arching back. So the reality is very, very messy, and there are many lessons to learn about the 4-minute mile, and there's a lot to learn about what Roger Bannister actually did, because we spoke about Santi and we spoke about Landy, but what did Roger Bannister actually do? But before I go into that mile in the year 1860, that's when the recording started. The time was 4:40, and then from 1860 to to 1950, the time dropped to just over 4 minutes. So between 1945-47, the time was just over 4 minutes, and people were saying, when is this gonna happen? And there are two Wharton School professors, means very smart thinking people, and they wrote a book called The Power of Impossible Thinking, Joram Wind and Colin Crook, and they actually looked at a whole assessment of what Bannister's accomplishment actually meant in terms of mindset rather than at the physical achievement. And they wondered also what happened afterwards, because if you look at the statistic, which I'm looking at here now, after 1955, how that record fell even further. It tumbled down to 3:50 very quickly, and many runners after that suddenly broke that barrier. What happened? Human evolution, genetic engineering experiment. What happened was, big drum roll, and this is the crux of our show, a change of mental model. The runners of the past, they had a mindset which basically said that they can't surpass the 4-minute mile, and there was evidence pointing towards it, because whether you believe you're right or you're not, you're going to be right. And once that limit was broken, the others saw that they could do it, and that's why it suddenly happened. Now, if you think about strategy or competition and even leadership, there are so many details which need to be adhered to. And mental models are what allow in your mind something to happen, which over time is going to shift, whereby you don't accept limitations. You don't make a trade-off. You don't accept for the middle way. Rather, you stay away from conventional wisdom. That's you going from, I've never run a marathon, to I'm going to run a marathon. It's a completely new distance. You need a new mental model. You need to not think in terms of limitations. You're not allowed to make trades off. You need to basically avoid the conventional wisdom. That's the whole thing. And that's what happened. 3 more joined, Bannister and Landy. Landy broke it in a 1954 season. And then within 2.5 years, there were 10 runners at a sub-4. So an improvement, but not a flood of individuals. There was Roger Bannister, John Landy, Lazio Tabori, Chris Cathaway, Brian Hewson, Jim Bailey, Ronnie Delaney, Gunnar Nielsen, Derek Ibbotson, and Istvan Rostivolgi. What a difficult Hungarian, difficult surname, up to 1956. And I mean, they broke the world record that was on the books for 9 years. And after Bannister had broken it, it was taken to the next level. You know, Herb Elliott, he dropped the record to 354s within 4 years. It's a psychological breakthrough. That was the key. And it's a very compelling story. And it's often thrown around in success seminars. But what actually happened is, we sometimes get stuck. We try to look at the outside of the story rather than, you know, like watching people dance rather than getting on the dance floor. It's a big step getting up onto the dance floor. The progression of the world records was a natural athletic progression. And why there was a stagnation is, well, most probably due to World War II. And that the Swedes, they had the freedom to continue their athletics career, while the rest of the world, it was put on hold. So there was no pressure on that. To summarize it even better is Bannister's run, he challenged those limiting beliefs. You know, despite so many years of failed attempts, and even Bannister, who wasn't so sure, but what he did is, and you can read it in The Law of Running, it's a fantastic book by Tim Noakes, which I'm going to review and give you an episode on that as well. He actually used the tool of visualization, which we've spoken about so many times here. If you think it doesn't work, Sir Roger Bannister showed that this definitely does work. He visualized it. He saw himself in his mind's eye before going asleep. That's what it says in the book. He saw himself stuck to the shoulder of John Landy, who achieved a faster time. He was running a mile in 3 minutes 58. You know that. John Landis, he achieved an even faster time on shorter distances. So he knew that there is other competitor out there. And running a mile in 3 minutes 58 was achieved by him even later. A year later, another three runners broke. And today, about 1,500 people have run a mile in 4 minutes or less. So the challenge of running that sub 4 minute mile is more psychological than physical. And you're never going to outperform your own self-image. If Roger Bannister wouldn't have been able to visualize this victory, and one of the key components was the win. You can hear that in the interview. It's a video on YouTube and it's put up in high quality. Whoever edited that and made it a high quality video, great job. Thanks for sharing that. And he said the wind was picking up before the race, but during the race, it was to his advantage. So we're all made up of stories, assumptions, and belief. People have told us things, coaches might have told us things, and this creates our reality and our self-image. And if you believe you're going to be running slowly, if you believe you can't be doing that marathon, it's going to happen. You're not going to be able to do it. But if you believe you are capable of finishing the marathon at a more specific time, because these beliefs, they're not consciously like I'm speaking now. It's based on previous experiences, but you haven't done that far distance. You haven't done that 5K in under 20 minutes. But if you do not see it in your mind's eye, your brain will put a limit in place to help you avoid that situation, to help you avoid that stress. It's that internal narrative that contains the facts of our running lives. It's the story we're telling ourselves about what type of runner we are and what distances we can do and what times we can do. And Sir Roger's accomplishment is a story that we should tell ourselves, not to place the artificial limit on our own potential. We should rewrite our eternal beliefs. That's why goal setting is so important. So the mental model that Bannister used to change this is just visualizing. Actually, it's got a very fancy name in psychotherapy. It's called REBT, Rational Emotive Behavior Therapy. But that's not the point. You can start right now envisioning your goal, that 5 kilometers in under 20 Ks, that 10Ks in under 40 minutes, that marathon in under 3 hours, in under 4 hours, that ultra marathon which you want to complete. It all starts by you first seeing it. And that's how using this four minute mile, you know, Bannister, he knew he was really chasing after a very ambitious goal. And he was, because it was big pressure on it. Now we know it can be done. But up until then, nobody, there were many naysayers. But Sir Roger Bannister was able to tell his mind that this isn't going to be easy. But with training and discipline, and he trained very little compared to others, my goodness. But he challenged his belief, and that's what makes it so important. I want to say a big thank you for listening to today's show. Let me just finish and share with you a Bible verse here, Hebrews 10. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. There you go. Build up on your confidence today as a runner and hit your personal best. My name is Heiko. God bless you. And take it easy. Greatest runners, American Indian Deerfoot, who traveled to Great Britain during the 1860s to become an international running sensation. If you're a runner, you're taking part in a sport that has been famous in 1860 and even further. You know, and they asked Deerfoot, how did he train? And he says on page 363, I've never trained. This is not the advice that Noakes gives, but I think it's a hint for his overall approach. Otherwise, why would he have included it in the book? And it's because one of his laws is, Noakes' laws is, achieve as much as possible on a minimum of training. Yoo-hoo! Don't you like hearing that? Achieve as much as possible on a minimum of training. So Noakes presents stories of the early heroes of distance running, the Flying Finn, Paavo Nurmi, and he gives their training secrets, or Herb Elliott, the Australian world record holder, and the American Frank Shorter, you know, had an Olympic marathon victory in 1972. And just, I was 1 year old then, you know, and it set off a running boom in the United States. And he was really an unremarkable runner until after he had finished college, and his VO2 max was a quite unremarkable 71.3. And Noakes presents information about the development of the African runners in 1960s, you know, Kenyan gold medalist Kip Keino. And he also focused on the emergence of the African runners over the last 50 years, and also Norwegian runners, Grete Waitz, you know, one of the greatest women runners of her generations. And Noakes' mantra always is avoid overtraining. And there's even a chapter on that for those of you that like to overtrain, which is called Avoid Overtraining. And rather focus on training the mind. That's another chapter which he begins with a discussion of Roger Bannister's psychological research, in which Bannister and his friends, they would run to the breaking point on a treadmill. You know who Roger Bannister is? Okay, good, fine. Whether oxygen or a mixture of air and oxygen would produce a better run performance. And it's interesting to speculate that Bannister's personal research into exercise physiology would give him an advantage in his quest to run the 4 minute mile. And Noakes actually says it's an incorrect assumption. And I'm quoting him here. I think success came first to him because he, Bannister, better than anyone perceived that the battle for the 4 minute mile was fought in the mind and not in the body. Wow, I told you, this show is going to help you become a better, a stronger, and a much smarter runner. You know, this is Bannister. This goes way back. And Bannister, of course, he credits his coach, Franz Stampfel. And in his book, the Law of Running, one of the chapters I enjoyed the most is where he describes exactly how Bannister used visualization for his running. And we had a podcast a couple of weeks back where we spoke about that. And I'll dive into that a little bit deeper once again. It is absolutely powerful stuff that's written in there. And then we get along into 15 laws of training that Noakes basically states. There are laws of training, and that's a great list. So law one, train frequently all year round. Law two, start gradually and train gently. Law three, these all make sense. Train first for distance, only later for speed. Law number four, don't set your daily training scheduled in stone. That's the killer right there. Law number 5, alternate hard and easy training. Yes, of course. Law 6, achieve as much as possible on a minimum of training. I personally like that one. Law 7, don't race when in training or run at race pace for distances above 16 kilometers. I don't think I could at the moment. Law 8, specialize. Means find the area you're going to focus on. Law 9, incorporate base training and sharpening. Law 10, prevent overtraining. Law 11, train with a coach. Law 12, the best one here, train the mind. Law 13, rest before a big race. Law 14, keep a detailed logbook. Law 15, understand the holism of training. In the book Law of Running, the Law 9 discussion, he picks up on that. He's basically focusing on programs, on training intensities, mandating specific pacing for specific training activities at different periods of training. So coaches and athletes determine these intensities based upon physiological parameters, percentages of VO2 max, or maximum heart rate. So both programs target optimal performance in race from months beforehand, and then it builds carefully towards that peak performance race. So both programs are moderate in terms of their mileage expectations in the range of 100 kilometers per week. So we're talking about elite athletes here, or 60 to 70 miles maximum. So it's like the Daniels program with the 24-week build-up, and there are four phases in that. So for 3 weeks in phase one, that's a Daniel program, the athlete does steady, easy running, and then for three more weeks, more of the same with the addition of some sprints, some stride sprints. And then the second part of phase one also introduces an element of the future weeks, a longer run of up to 25%, only 25% of the weekly mileage. We get to phase two, week 7 to 12. Some quality running is required right there. So one workout each week on day four, it's either repeats 400 meters at race pace or repeat miles at a tempo pace with a short recovery. If you currently you're not in shape, don't listen to this and go, oh, I can't do that anyway. You will be in shape. And if you adhere to a plain training plan, you will reach phase two, means you have completed phase one, which will give you that base to then perform in phase two. That'll help you keep that tempo pace for the mile repeats. Or even if you feel you can't go faster, the short rest that helps in between. So there's a second workout on day 7 where, and I'm quoting here, intervals of on and off, again running, 1 minute, 2 minute, or 3 minute runs at 5,000 meter pace, and then easy running for recovery. So that's that interval pace. Or you could maintain for 15 or 20 minutes of competitive running. And these weeks, they also include a day or two for some strides or 200 and 400 meter sprints, which I absolutely don't enjoy, but you need to do them. And the rest of the week is filled with a long run on day one. Yes, most of us love to do the long run, don't we? Phase three, that's weeks 13 to 18. That's the hardest training of the program. So day one is a long run. Day two is the easy run. But the midweek program includes an interval day, repeats of a kilometer or a mile at 5K pace on day three. So day four is an extended tempo run of 20 minutes, 200 meter race sprints included. After easy runs on day five and six, day seven is race or another interval day. And the races are important because it helps you establish a race pace, which in turn establishes the pace of anaerobic threshold, approximately 88% of VO2 max, or about 90% of maximum heart rate. So phase three then includes three hard days out of the seven. Phase four training, that's weeks 19 to 24, is the final quality phase. That's where there's intense training combined with rest and recovery, of course, just before the big race. So this reduces the day one long run to 20% of your weekly mileage. It moves the 20-minute tempo run to day three. Day four becomes a day for sharpening workout and some tempo runs, repeat miles, and it introduces some fatigue, a couple of 1 kilometer intervals at 5K pace to really train at that anaerobic threshold. And then four faster 200 meter repeats at race pace complete the workout to approach that top speed. Easy Running fills days 5 and 6, who doesn't like hearing that, with a race or interval workout on day 7. And the final race week, it drops the day 4 workout. And that's the Daniels program, and it makes good one to use in evaluating what you've been actually doing, in reflecting with Noakes' laws of trainings. And his phase schedule fits the rhythm of that schedule. Okay, you heard my enthusiasm, Tim Oakes' Law of Running. It really is a book that explains everything about running in really simple way. I tried my best to give you a summary of a 930-page book. I hope it came across. That's what I want. I want you to be inspired by this book. I want you to be walking around with it and then paging it and reading up on it. Much better than spending time on social media. You know, Tim Noakes, the author, he's a very smart and experienced guy. He knows a lot about the science behind running. And in this book, he really covers all the important stuff you need to know if you want to become a better runner. He talks about how your body works, how your body works when you run. There's advice on how to train effectively. And Noakes also explores different training plans and helps you understand which one is best for you. And it's a self-accomplished mission. And there's a cool thing about the book, that it's not just about the physical side of running. Otherwise, I wouldn't have spoken about it. You know that this show is about your attitude, about your mental state. And Noakes, he dives into the mental aspect too. He talks about the mindset you should have and about how to stay motivated. And of course, you know, that's super helpful. You know, running isn't just about your legs. It's as we always discuss, season number 5, what goes on in your head. Noakes also breaks down some myths and misconceptions which you as a runner on your run journey are gonna encounter. And it's easy to understand. It's maybe the summary didn't come across like that. But he talks about hydration, nutrition, recovery, which is all crucial for your run success. And he shares stories from his own experience and those of other runners. That makes the book very relatable for me. It's like getting advice from a good coach, from a friend. So even if you're not, you know, planning to become that pro runner, it has so much for you, whether you're a beginner or experienced. And Noakes provides that practical advice that you can really apply in your training. And his writing style is very easy to follow. So in summary, Tim Noakes, Law of Running, fantastic guide for anybody interested in running. Even though it's from 1986, it's a treasure trove of knowledge, and it's written in such a way that it's accessible. So whether you're lacing your running shoes or just thinking about it, please give this book a read so that you can unlock the secrets and successful and enjoyable running combined with Advanced Endurance Coaching Podcast, where we help you build that motivation so that you're not just reading the book and getting frustrated because of the things you're not doing. You'll actually be able to use the tools in this podcast to keep you going. Yo, there was a lot of information today. I want to finish off with a fantastic verse from the Bible, James 1 verse 12. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. A great verse to finish off the show. I say thanks for your attention. Thank you for your time. If you feel the show, somebody needs to listen to it, somebody needs to get some more detailed advice, please do share this link. My name is Heiko. God bless you. And remember, take it easy.